Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How did an artificial lake built as an out-of-town water source grow into a crown jewel of the Dallas Park Service at the very heart of the city? That's the story of White Rock Lake, which was carved out of farmland along the White Rock Creek nearly a century ago when the area was still far away from any homes or businesses. Since then, the lake has done time as a water source, a bathing beach, a speedboat course, even a seaplane landing site, and its shores have housed day laborers, war prisoners, and SMU students. Here to share how and why it all happened the way it did is Sally Rodriguez. She is historian for the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, and she's just written a new book called Images of America, White Rock Lake. Sally, welcome to Think.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
How did the city decide where the lake would go?
Well, that was actually Dallas Water Utilities, and there's lots of discussion about that. And some of them think it actually, SMU was in the planning stages, and so it needed a water source that would provide that, and that was closer. They didn't have enough water in the to pull from the Trinity, and that's why they needed a larger storage area for water.
And making a lake where none has been before is no easy feat.
No, it's not, especially when you have that much white rock underneath. There's a lot of dynamiting to get those intake wells.
And the white rock is limestone?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So they were using, back in the 19-teens, steam-powered machinery?
Yes, they were using steam-powered machinery. Things were being pulled in by mules and horses. Yes, it was all pretty much by hand digging.
It's funny to think that this was 10 miles northeast of the city back
then. It was way outside of the city. And when they first started pumping the water there, it was not chlorinated, nor was it filtered. And it was pumped directly into people's homes.
So it was a water source, but not the nice clean water we're accustomed to today.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And they started in 1910. And back then, the workers had to live in tents because they were too far away to commute every day.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct, they did.
And do you know how big the force was that was working?
No, I have not seen anything on the number of force, the number. But I do know that the city sold all the crops that were in the field. Mm-hmm. They left them in the field. They sold the crops. But they didn't sell the wood that they took down along the creeks.
Yeah, they kept that for lower-income families.
Yes, the city gave it away through the city welfare department that winter.
Was everybody, as far as you can tell, delighted that this lake was going in, or were there people who wanted something
else?
There
was a little controversy, and one of my favorite stories on Dallas Water Utilities, there was actually an alderman prior to the beginning of this lake that felt that all of Dallas's water should come from artesian wells and not from groundwater. So he dropped a well in what's now Reverchon Park. The problem is the quantity of water wasn't there, nor was the quality. It had a high mineral content. It was good as a laxative.
And not so, what you want to be drinking eight glasses of a day.
But they did pump it up the hill to Parkland Hospital.
Specifically for that purpose?
Specifically for that purpose.
Okay, so as it turned out, the lake was finished in 1911, but it didn't actually become a lake for some time after that.
It was the dam and spillway were completed in 1911, but the lake didn't fill because we were in a drought. And once it did fill, it overflowed the spillway by 42 inches.
Wow.
So some things haven't changed around here. We go real fast from feast to famine and back to famine again.
I was surprised to read that early on people were allowed to swim at the spillway.
Yes, and actually I hear stories of people up into the 50s and 60s that swam at the spillway.
Of course, it's exceptionally dangerous and we don't want anyone to do this, but it does seem tempting sometimes when it's flowing gently over that area.
Yes, it does. Now it is all fenced off now.
Mm-hmm. And there was a walkway over the spillway for
Yes, up until about the 50s, and it was a storm that the big logs coming over the spillway finally took it out. And with the current restoration at the spillway, they were actually looking at a way to put that back. But once again, because of the storm debris coming over the spillway.
How long will it be, by the way, until that project is complete?
That project should be complete by March of this year.
Oh, really?
So it's almost finished, yes.
Okay, good. Talk about this. From the very beginning, George Kessler visualized this not only as a water source, but as really a great park site.
Correct. In 1911, Dallas Park and Recreation Board hired George Kessler to come to town to do a master plan for the whole city. And part of what's on the ground now at Turtle Creek is a result of George Kessler's plan. But the lake hadn't even been filled yet in 1911, and he's already predicting that White Rock Lake could be one of the grand parks of this country.
How long did it take for people to start using it that way?
They almost immediately started using it. The lake was surrounded. It had private boathouses. People had summer boathouses. There were also private company clubhouses all around the lake. In fact, some of our areas, Dreyfus Club on Dreyfus Hill was developed by the Dreyfus & Son employees. T&P Hill is named for the Texas and Pacific Clubhouse that's set there on the hill.
I'm embarrassed to say that it's always called TP Hill, and
yes.
I assumed that it was like named for the Indian dwelling.
Well, I recently found out how that happened. The fourth superintendent out at White Rock Lake, he was told to put a sign at T&P Hill, and that's what he put up. He thought it would sell better at a bond election than T&P Hill.
Was it Texas and Pacific? Is that
it's
what
named for the Texas and Pacific Railway, whose clubhouse, employee clubhouse, was on the hill.
And until very recently, there have been tracks over in that area. How long was the railroad running there?
Actually, we thought it was built at the same time as the pump house was built, but we've recently uncovered a picture from 1910. So there was a spur of the Katy Trail, mm-hmm. you know, our Katy Trail. It was a spur, and it brought equipment into the construction area,
sure.
And it took debris out. But it was used when the pump house was active. That was used to bring the coal to the pump house. That pump house was coal generated.
Of course, the pump house just this past year has been opened up for events and things
like that. The filtration tanks that were added in 1923.
Mm-hmm.
The first chlorinated water did come out of White Rock through the pump station. But 1923, they added filtration tanks. And so at that point, that's when the water became filtered.
So before that, it was chlorinated but not filtered.
Correct.
And chlorination was a big step forward.
Yes, it was.
What did that do to the wildlife in the lake when it was – could fish exist there?
Yes, fish – the chlorination happened after it left the pump house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we operated the bathing beach, the swimming pool at White Rock Lake from 1930 to 1953, we actually chlorinated the lake. We would go out in boats and put chlorine in that part of the lake.
And then eventually somebody built a pipe.
There was a pipe that went from the bathhouse down into the water.
Talk about the swimming area, because I think a lot of people who like the lake today think, wouldn't that be so great if we had that today?
Well, when they built that bathhouse in 1930, that was the first thing we built when it became a park. And they came in and they put a concrete apron in and they brought sand and they called it a beach. The diving platform is still out there in the water. And that was the place to swim. We called it a swimming pool. And in 1953, because of a drought, they had to close the swimming because they had to reactivate the pumps at White Rock Lake. And swimming has not been allowed in the city lake ever since.
There were speedboat races early on?
Yes, there were. In fact, the cover of the book has a 1938 speedboat race picture. And that really caused a lot of conflicts with the sailboats. And so eventually a city ordinance was instituted that no motor over 5 horsepower could be out on the lake.
And that also meant no more. There were pleasure cruises on these barges.
The Bonnie Barge. And that was the place to go on a date. You could dance out on the Bonnie Barge, but that was the place to go.
At what point did, I guess concession stands were a big deal because there were no grocery stores and things.
Correct.
Around.
There were no grocery stores. There were no fast food restaurants. And there were a lot of concession stands. And then when the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, came in, they actually built 3 concession buildings at the lake.
Talk about the CCC, because it operated almost like a little city.
Correct. This is part of FDR's Back to Work program. And they took young men. Single young men. They got paid $30 a month.
22 of which went home to mom and dad.
22 went home to support mom and dad, and they got to keep 8. The Army ran the camps, and so it was run like an army. The National Park Service actually did all the plans. So all those buildings were designed by the National Park Service, very much like you'd find at a state or a national park.
And a lot of the trees that now ring the lake were also put in by the CCC.
Correct. That first year, they planted 500 pecan trees in the northeast part of the lake. And you can still see those pecan trees. They're pretty old and raggedy looking, but those pecan trees still stand.
Yes, a couple times a year, once a year, there's pecan shells just everywhere.
Everywhere, yes. Yeah.
And where did the trees come from? Were they local?
They actually had a nursery at another camp in Mesquite. Mm-hmm. And so that's where a lot of the trees came from.
My guest this hour is Sally Rodriguez, who is historian for the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. Her new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. If there is something you have always wondered about the lake, Sally is the person to answer it. Right now, we would ask that you take just a moment and give us a call at the other important number we have this time of year. That is 1-888-694-6931. That is the telephone number to make a financial contribution to KERA to say, yes, we value this kind of service. We want to make sure that public radio exists in our community. And we understand that that it is listener support that makes it strong. Again, the telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also make a contribution online at kera.org. If you would like to have a copy of the new book, Images of America, White Rock Lake, we have that available at our standard book thank you gift rate of $120. You can make that contribution and we will send you a copy of the book with our compliments. It is full of really great historic photographs. If you enjoy using the lake and have wondered what it might have looked like half a century or a century ago, this is definitely something that you would love to add to your collection. Our telephone number, 888-694-6931. You can go online as well to kera.org. We love the fact in producing Think and making this local show that we can make it really interesting to you on a variety of subjects. You know, we may talk about things that affect the entire planet, and we may talk about things that are very close to home. And it's great to be able to have that flexibility. It's only possible when we're able to create a show here in North Texas. You can't get this kind of coverage when we only have programming that comes in from the national sources like NPR and PRI. So your gift makes it possible for us to have conversations like this one. 1-888-694-6931. Scott Murray is here from our membership department. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Chris. And we want to let everybody know that we just crossed $300,000 raised for the station.
So we are at the halfway mark.
We're at the halfway mark, all downhill from here. That's right. That's right. And those are all donations that came in at different levels. So we want to thank everyone who's donated in this drive so far and helped us get to the halfway mark, because this the momentum is definitely on our side. And we want to thank everyone who's called or gone online to help support another year of public radio on in North Texas.
It takes just a couple of minutes to become a member for the first time or to renew a membership. You call 1-888-694-6931 or you go online to kera.org. The amount you decide to contribute is up to you. If you think public radio brings you $500 worth of value in a year, make that pledge. If you think it brings you $500 but you can only do $10 or $20 a month, we're delighted with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Make the call. You choose the amount. Sustaining memberships are becoming more and more popular, Scott.
They really, really are. And this is a means of taking maybe $120 and spreading it out over a year. You can use a credit or debit card in your sustaining membership. It can come out of a checking account. A lot of listeners like it because they know they're always giving without maybe always needing that reminder. They can, and then they can make additional gifts during the course of the drive. Between radio and TV, I think there's 7,000 sustaining members, and I think half of that is radio. So more and more people are choosing to make a sustaining gift, and it allows them to keep giving ongoing year after year.
1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. If you're interested in a copy of the new book, Images of America, White Rock Lake, give us a call and make a $120 contribution. You can also take care of all of this online at kera.org. Back in a minute with more of the history of White Rock Lake.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is the historian for the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, Sally Rodriguez. Her new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Sally, it's my understanding that some of the little houses that are near the lake, particularly in Lake Highlands, started out as people's sort of holiday cottages.
They were their summer lake house, just like everybody, a lot of people today in Dallas have summer lake houses outside of the city. These were summer lake houses.
And so people would, I suppose, just go for the weekend and
Correct. Then leave.
I suppose most months of the year you can probably get out there and have a good time.
Right,
in Dallas.
And some of them did hunting and fishing and...
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's take a call from Stephen in Irving. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, go right ahead.
Question for you about the history of the bathhouse. I did some work out there at the Cultural Center for a while.
Yes, sir.
And there was a story that one of the staff told me about how at one point the city had tried to demolish it, and the bulldozer that they rolled up to try to start to knock it down just stopped when it hit those heavy concrete walls. And then they decided to rethink it and decided to do something with it instead of simply tearing it down. And I was wondering if there was any, if that story was accurate, and if so, any more details about that? I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks for your call.
To my knowledge, that is totally new. I had not ever heard that story, and I've not ever uncovered that in any of our records concerning the bathhouse.
Is there anything in the records to confirm the story of the Lady of the Lake?
No, there's not. But what I do tell people is she's purportedly buried at the Cox Cemetery, which is on the northwest corner of the lake on a little street called Dow Green, just west of the lake. And that little street is what remains of the Dallas to Greenville Highway that was put in prior to the lake being built.
Talk about that cemetery. I stumbled upon it accidentally once just on a walk and had no idea it was there. And it's sort of locked off to the public.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It is still a private. It is still an active cemetery. But if you walk by, you'll see a lot of names that you recognize. Fisher, Trammell, Dixon, a lot of those names. And actually, that cemetery predates the lake. It was begun in the 1800s.
And how did Lothar Drive get its name?
From Joe E. Lothar. He was a former mayor of Dallas.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to David at Love Field. Hey, David.
Hi, Chris and Sally. What a great show. I just really enjoy this because White Rock Lake was such a big part of my life growing up in East Dallas. From 1944 until 1953, when they closed the swimming pavilion, I literally lived on that beach. back in those days, we didn't have air conditioning, and the only place to get cool was to go to the lake. And my mother would get all the kids, and we'd just literally spend the whole day there. Now, I'm not sure if we did it for the coolness of the water or whether or not my mother was hitting on the lifeguard. But I wanted to ask Sally if she's ever heard of the submarine races.
Oh, I hate to admit that I think I've been to a few submarine races through the years.
At the lake.
At the lake, yes. That was a term you use for going parking.
Oh.
I grew up not too far from White Rock also.
So was this was it open all night? Could you camp there?
At one time, yes. In fact, the CCC boys built a camp, and it was for tent camping there along on the East Lothar shore, just down from Dreyfus Club.
And the CCC boys, if they hadn't finished high school, were also required to go to school at night.
Correct. In fact, I met a gentleman who said he was 16 and in the sixth grade when he joined in 1939. When he first got there, they asked him if he could drive a truck. He said, sure can, except he almost ended up in the lake. And he became a truck driver. Mm-hmm. And while he was there, he was required to go to class to earn his GED. When war broke out, if you were in the CCC, you were automatically inducted into the Army. because he was a truck driver, he got sent to a diesel mechanics class in Oklahoma. He said he was really nervous because he was there with people who had real high school diplomas, had some college. He did so well, the government sent him to USC where he earned a degree in engineering. He said that would have never been possible if it hadn't been for the CCC.
What a great story. So after the war broke out, obviously there was no use for the barracks to hold CCC construction workers, and they took on a very different purpose.
Correct. The Park Board drew up a contract with the War Department that they could use that camp for anything they deemed necessary. Well, the first thing they deemed necessary was a health facility for soldiers with STDs. Well, as you could tell, that probably didn't go over real good with the neighborhood, so the Park Board went back and renegotiated their contract. And then the camp became a ferrying unit, but eventually became a branch of the Mejia POW camp. And it housed soldiers from Rommel's famed Africa Corps.
Mm-hmm. So they were happier with German prisoners of war than they were with Americans with STDs.
Yes.
1-888-694-6931. We're talking this hour with Sally Rodriguez, whose new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. Let's go next to Carrie in Dallas. Hey, Carrie.
Oh, hi. This is Carrie. Great program. Thank you very much for taking my call. Just a quick comment about the ghost. 1953, Tolbert wrote a book called Neiman Marcus, Texas. In the intro to the book, it talks about Guy and Thelma Malloy, who happen to live in the peninsula area right there on the edge of the lake. And it talks about Thelma and Guy's experience with the ghost and picking this young lady up. And if you ever knew Thelma Malloy, as I did, she knew what she said, and she said what she knew. And it was just an amazing story to have known Thelma Malloy and the firsthand story of the ghost. That's my only comment, and thanks again for the great show.
Oh, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Does every urban lake have a legend like that?
Pretty much. I know Austin does.
Uh-huh.
And they're all very similar.
Mm-hmm. I guess it makes it more exciting.
It does.
To drive by there late at night. We have an email here from Carol in Dallas who writes, "We lived a few blocks away from White Rock between 1953 and 63. As children, my brother and I regularly walked to the lake and crossed the spillway to watch the water flow beneath us." That, by the way, is a theme in the book. People have done this since it's been
correct.
There. She says, "In those days, we could drive all around the lake. It was a pleasant diversion on a hot Sunday afternoon, and oil tycoon H.L. Hunt threw an annual Easter egg hunt on the grounds of his mansion overlooking the lake."
I have heard that. I also know that that was the place to go trick-or-treating at Halloween.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Yes. A lot of people would go there.
A lot of good exercise, too, running up all those hills and getting over to the next house.
Correct.
Our number, 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak next with Joel in Dallas. Hey, Joel.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Love the show today.
Thank you.
I was wondering if your guests could comment on the presence or lack thereof of things like bobcats and foxes and coyotes around the lake. You know, I'm guessing they're raccoons. And I've heard rumors about that kind of wildlife down there. I've never seen it. Also, maybe a comment on the origins of the wild parrots that hang out at the White Rock substation.
Oh, those bright green birds.
Yes, yeah. Yes. About 5 years ago, we began a process, and it was the restoration of the Blackland Prairie. And when we started, it was 191 plant species. Well, now there's over 300 plant species. We didn't plant anything. Everything has just come back, and with that has come the wildlife. And, yes, I have seen bobcat and coyote myself. The red-tailed hawks are just wonderful. I've seen more and more of those. And there's other birds that haven't been sighted at the lake in years that are coming back. But, yes, there are stories of the bobcats and coyotes. And raccoons are as big as dogs in that area.
The possums are pretty big, too.
The possums are pretty big. There is a lot of wildlife. There's a great green belt that runs from the north all the way to the Trinity, and it's quite a green belt, allows the animals to move up and down.
And what is the story with those green bright green birds. They're in a flock.
Right. Somebody told me it's just those that have been released over the years that have gathered.
Amazing how well they've done.
Yeah, they have. We think they've done real well. TXU, I don't know how thrilled they are with them because they like to nest in the power plant.
Oh.
And that power plant location is actually where the jail used to be.
Oh, okay.
Was called the Pea Patch, was mm-hmm. in that same location.
And when did SMU use this as a sort of branch of the dormitory system?
When the war was over, SMU experienced a huge influx of young men, and they didn't have enough dorms. And so they used that former CCC, former POW camp, as dorms. And they actually nicknamed that area Perunaville.
And that was the name of the mascot at
the
time.
That's the name of the mascot, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I guess there must have been some sort of shuttle service for the
yes.
students?
Yes. In fact, a gentleman I knew was the bus driver. They
oh,
had a
wow.
bus driver that drove them back and forth.
I guess there was some residence. There were some residential houses there at the lake for people who were taking care of it.
Correct. In fact, our maintenance office on the east side of the lake is one of those former residences. There was a two-story frame home on the west side of the lake over by the pump station. In that same area over there is where Private Boat Works was, Jackson Boat Works. And the private boathouses that were on the lake up until the 1952, you could rent your space for $1 a year.
Pretty good deal.
Pretty good deal.
But then everybody else said, hey, this is not fair. We want to get into the lake.
Correct. And mm-hmm. so that's when the private boathouses and clubhouses went away.
Sally Rodriguez is here. We're talking about the history of White Rock Lake. Her new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. If you would like to receive a copy of Images of America, White Rock Lake, you can call us now at 1-888-694-6931. It's available as a thank you with a $120 membership contribution to the station or above if you are so inclined. Jeff Whittington is joining us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And what a fantastic conversation. And we're probably getting that territory. I mean, look at all the people calling in and people are emailing.
You can remember the call-in number. You can remember the number to make a contribution.
That's right. It's 1-888-694-6931. Chewy Chen in Farmers Branch remembered the call-in number. Thank you very much. Also, Ricardo Coster in Allen, Raman Govington in Murphy, Texas, and Ian Hack in Dallas. Also, Robert Plogger in Dallas. They remember the call-in number or that they could go online to kera.org and make a contribution there.
This is such a fascinating show. It's so wonderful. We were talking about this a bit before, Jeff, to be able to explore not only things that happen far away and how they relate to us, but also occasionally on Think, we're delighted to be able to explore local history and culture and tradition. And this is all about science and sort of the history of the lake and how it's become a sanctuary for animal life and human beings as well.
I was reading in the paper just the other day that someone actually saw a bald eagle at White Rock Lake last week.
No kidding.
And in Sunset Bay over on the it's over on the east side, and it's just such an amazing place. I mean, I'll go out there and spin around on my bike once a week or so, and it's such a great place to really feel like you're kind of apart from the buzz of the city. And it's a real jewel in Dallas, and I think it's our audience is responding. And if you appreciate this program, you appreciate these conversations, how about supporting this other jewel in Dallas, which is your public radio station, KERA. Call us, 888-694-6931. Join at the $120 level, and we'll get you your very own copy of the book on White Rock Lake. If you join at the $220 level, we can throw in the National Parks 6 DVD set.
That's a nice little combo. You can create your own combination of thank you gifts.
You can, yeah. I mean, I just added 100 and 120. But those
the people in Pledge Control Central are frantic
now. No, those are still available, too, and they've been really popular. This is the Ken Burns series, the National Parks. It's 6 2-hour DVDs. It's unbelievable. Chris, we had him on the show last spring before the show debuted in the fall, mm-hmm. and we got to see a little trailer, and now the whole thing's out. It's available with our thanks when you join the station with a contribution of $100 or more, and the or more is really emphasized there. because we really do need to make some progress on the drive.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. You know, anybody who hangs out at White Rock Lake really feels like it's their lake. Like, I live within walking distance, and I definitely feel as if this is my space, and my kids feel that way. The book is really a treasure. There are so many photographs. In fact, it's mostly photographs with a lot of informative text explaining them. And you can see what things look like.
Wow.
At their original moment, and it's so much fun to think, oh, I know that place, but here it is in 1930.
Yeah, exactly. It's so neat to hear the story or see the stories of the people who sort of the caretakers of the lake or who sort of built, had businesses and the snack stand, and oh, he was a police officer as well. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, these people were such, you know, because I think back to Dallas in the 20s and 30s and the 40s and, you know, the Bonnie and Clyde days and kind of how it was and the fact that White Rock Lake was so far away from Dallas that anyone who was working there had to actually be housed on site because it would take half a day to get there, I guess. So it's just really neat to look back at a time when somewhere where we can just walk there or, you know, ride our bikes if you live in that part of Dallas or drive there if you're from another part of Dallas, was so remote and so new and fresh.
I will go out on a limb here and say public radio is the only place that you will hear a one-hour in-depth conversation of this on the broadcast spectrum anywhere in North Texas. If the book gets noticed elsewhere, it'll be a minute or two, which is far too little in our opinion. We love the privilege and the luxury of having time to really talk about things that matter to all of us, things that are a part of our shared history and part of sort of explaining to people who are new to the area of what our history is. Public radio allows for this, and we are able to do it thanks to your generosity. We only exist because of the contributions of people like you who listen to the station and feel that it is worth not only their time, but just a little bit of their money. Make a call now. Make a contribution at 1-888-694-6931. You can receive a copy of White Rock Lake and a copy of the entire Ken Burns series.
Yeah, the Ken Burns National Parks 6-DVD 12-hour series is also available when you call 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. You can get all the information, but please do support the station. Please support the show that brings you these kinds of conversations. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is historian for the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, Sally Rodriguez. Her new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Let's go next to Kenny in East Dallas. Hello, Kenny.
Yes, hello. Sally, do you know anything about the attempt to turn White Rock into a, you know, a landing port for seaplanes at any time?
Actually, there was back in, I can't remember the date, but there was a time, probably in the 20s, that there was a seaplane and you could hitch rides for evening rides around White Rock Lake.
So it wasn't a long distance thing. It was just you could take a little tour.
You could take a tour of the area in the seaplane.
Let's go next on the phone, this time at 800-933-5372 to Paul in Dallas. Hello, Paul.
Hi. I grew up in the Lake Collins area. I was a graduate of Lake Collins High School and Lake Collins Junior High. And I remember in the late 70s, early 80s, the area around White Rock Lake, spent a lot of time there with my dad and mom. And I was wondering when swimming stopped at the lake and why there's no longer swimming at the lake. And my second question was, I don't know if Sally might know anything about Flagpole Hill. I once ran away from home and found myself late one night at Flagpole Hill, then decided later on, of course, to go home. But have some memories about Flagpole Hill. I was just curious if that is a part of White Rock Lake or considered a part of that community.
Well, it is, and we're glad you made it back, and we'll let Sally tell you what she knows.
Yes, Flagpole Hill is very much a part of White Rock Lake. In fact, it was originally called Durant's Point Overlook. And when the CCC, the very first project they had was develop Flagpole Hill because it was such a beautiful scenic overlook, an overlook of the lake. And yes, I am also a Lake Highlands grad and went to Lake Highlands Junior High. So I did spend a lot of time there myself. Swimming at the lake was discontinued in 1953 because of a drought. They had to reactivate the pumps at White Rock Lake, and they've never allowed swimming since.
Is it just a concern that it's too dangerous?
You know, once again, the Park and Recreation Department is responsible for the land. Dallas Water Utilities still maintains the water. And so they're the ones that are doing the project at the spillway because they maintain that. But all of our City of Dallas lakes say no swimming.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we're lucky that Flagpole Hill was not a good place to grow things.
Correct. In fact, I've heard a quote from the Goforce, which is who that land was purchased from, that they didn't understand why anybody would be interested in that rock that nothing would grow on.
It's probably the best site in the City of Dallas for flying a kite.
Yes, it is. It's a beautiful site still today.
Let's go next to Jane in Fort Worth. Hey, Jane.
Oh, hey, this is Jane. Hello, Chris. Hello, Sally.
Hello.
I just heard you mention the Goforth name, and my first grade teacher at Reinhardt over in East Dallas was Mrs. Goforth. I bet they were related. I'm calling about three things. I want to make a donation and get this wonderful book. I want to share one of my memories. My parents bought our house on San Fernando for $3,000 in 1941.
Wow.
And we were two blocks from the lake. And sometime during our childhood, the camp house and the what's the neighbor of the camp house?
De Gaulier Estate.
The De Gaulier house, they were both abandoned for years because that was our playground. We went over there and built forts. We called it the cane forest. There was an acre or more of wild cane growing there. So we really literally grew up there at the Arboretum. And then I wanted to ask a question, and I'll leave the line then. If you've included any history of the Arboretum in your book.
Yes, I have. There's some original 1942 pictures or 41 pictures from when the house was first opened. And then when we bought the property is some pictures. And the camp estate was actually purchased by the Arboretum and not the city, but the camp house was never really lived in. He died before it was finished, and Mrs. Camp would just come out for events. She pretty much lived in the city.
So that, you know, when I heard camp house, I assumed that was owned by the De Gauliers and that they had, that was like a guest cottage for their visitors. It was actually another family.
It was actually another family, the Camps.
Oh, okay. And they're both still available now for tours, is that right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. They're both part of the Arboretum.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Kelly in Dallas. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, great show.
Thank you.
I just renewed my membership. You wait for that one perfect time, you know, when there's a show you love, and then that's when you renew, and I just did it.
Thank you so much.
I've done a couple of professional bio surveys at the lake, and I wanted to add to the list that you guys had described of what you can find out at the lake, because you're absolutely right. White Rock Lake and its position between the Trinity and the Blackland Prairies is like a wildlife highway. And in addition to the species you guys talked about, there's a lot of muskrat. There's obviously a big population of beaver. A lot of people don't know that there's a healthy population of mink that live out at the lake. There's long-tailed weasel. There's a special species of rabbit called a swamp rabbit that you find in real wet areas that I've seen a couple of actually specimens of. My daughter and I were out there on a walk last week, and she saw a red fox. She described it, ran about 15 feet away from us. Wow. And we looked back in the books, and she had nailed the idea of that. There's gray fox. There's even been a couple of feral pigs that have wandered up and down through the bottomlands there. And you're right, bald eagle comes in in the winter a few every year because they're a fish eater, and you'll find them fishing at the lake over in Sunset Bay and even sometimes right on the spillway. And there's at least 12 species of hawk and falcon mm-hmm. that you find out there, 3 species of owl, which you can hear almost any night. If you even when you used to be able to drive around the lake, you could drive out there and hear them calling. And well over 200 species of birds, including those monk parakeets that you were asking about, the ones that live out mm-hmm. there in the power station, they are released. They're the descendants of wild releases. And the reason they do so well out there is they build, unlike all the other species of parrot in the world, a communal nest. And if you go out to that substation out there, you'll see that they build like parrot condos. They get together and build these giant thatched nests that actually allow them to overwinter in the kind of relatively mild winters we have here, but they're a Bolivian and a Brazilian species, you know, tropical species. They're not used to it. But those communal nests actually allow them to survive the kind of winters we get here. So White Rock Lake is absolutely one of the best places, not just in Dallas, but in all of North Texas to go if you want to take your kids out to find some unexpected wildlife.
Kelly, before we let you go, is there a best time of day? Is there a favorite time for you that
you
can see the most?
Yeah, you want to go out at the beginnings and the ends of the day. The, mm-hmm. Most of these animals are what are called crepuscular. They come out in the twilight or the dawn. And the beaver, I've actually seen beaver out in the fish hatchery right beside the spillway, usually between about 5 and 6 in the morning, or occasionally when my kids and I are walking out at sunset, we'll be over there by the boathouse and go off that little bridge that goes right past the boathouse. Yeah. And my 4-year-old son looked down and said, "Hey, Dad, look, there's a beaver." And it was probably about 6:45, you know, maybe 15 minutes before sunset. And he was just sitting there munching on some vegetation, and we were probably 5 feet away from him. Looked right into our eyes, you know, and they just sort of slid off into the water and swam away. So do it around dawn if you can get up early enough, or do it right before you eat dinner. Go out there at sunset.
So glad you called. Thank you so much, Kelly.
All right, thank you, guys.
I guess we haven't talked about the fish hatchery. Tell us briefly about how that came
to be. Actually, the fish hatchery was built by park staff. And then in 1935, there was a state fish hatchery at Fair Park. And to get ready for the centennial, that state fish hatchery had to move. And so that fish hatchery at White Rock Lake became a state fish hatchery for just a couple of years before the state moved on. But those ponds are still there. We've never done anything with them. That area is still there.
And sometimes it's dry and sometimes there's water.
Correct.
In it. Mm-hmm. And Sally, before we conclude this, what's up next for the lake?
Is more restoration on the east side. We've done the trail on the west side, and it's more restoration on the east side. The completion of that spillway, there's some beautiful new overlooks that are included with that spillway project. Also, White Rock Northwest Highway is under construction, which will allow the trail to go under.
No more deadly bike crossings.
No more deadly bike crossings, but there'll also be a trail that runs east and west. Just north of Northwest Highway. So it'll make that safer also.
Well, we'll all look forward to it. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us. It's been
a
real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Sally Rodriguez is historian for the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. Her new book is called Images of America, White Rock Lake. If you would like to receive a copy of the book with our compliments, you can call 1-888 right now, 1-888-694-6931. It's available with a $120 contribution to the station to make sure that we can continue to bring you great programming like this. If you can do $220 or heck, round up to $240, that's just $20 a month on the sustaining plan. You can also receive, in addition to Images of America, White Rock Lake, the entire Ken Burns National Parks series, which I have to tell you, if any time in the next decade you think you might swing by one of America's extraordinary national parks, this is a wonderful inspiration and gets you really excited about your trip.
Hey, and Chris, if you round it up to
round it up to 200.
480, and we'll throw in the Rick Steves Travel in Europe super pack as well.
540, and you get a Think Mug.
Right. See, there you go. Wow, all this great stuff. And you were thinking about giving $500 to the station anyway. So call now, 888-694-6931. It's 1-888-694-6931. Online at KERA.org. I've got to say that all the stuff that we've talked about so far in the drive, The things I want the most, Chris, are the White Rock Lake book.
This copy's mine.
I know. The Rick Steves Super Pack with all 80 episodes and the Ken Burns National Parks. I mean, what an incredible offer. And what an incredible radio station. You hear about all this stuff. We talked to Rick Steves. We've talked to Ken Burns. We just talked to Sally Rodriguez from the Parks Department. We just ask you to support it. 888-694-6931.
You know, it's always exciting for us when we have a full board of calls from people who are really excited about the thing that we're talking about. Public radio is full of listeners who really value this kind of programming. You know that you're not going to get this anywhere else, that KERA is unique in this sense. You know, Jeff, you mentioned that the book itself and White Rock Lake are really local treasures. And we know many of you treasure KERA and treasure having a service here that is programmed specifically for you. We do have a lot of phenomenal national and international programming. But our program director, Jeff Ramirez, takes into account what you want, what this community wants. This is not the same way that he programmed the station that he worked at in Alaska or in any of the other markets that he's worked in. This is specifically put together with the needs and the desires and the interests of North Texas in mind. And that is one reason that we're able to have a locally produced program for you, like Think and like anything you ever wanted to know on Fridays. Your support at 1-888-694-6931 makes it all possible.
Of course, have you ever heard some of Jeff's stories about the radio? Some of the radio stations, you know, Alaska's a state network, and some of the stations actually say stuff like, you know, hey, Walter, your mom's float plane has just landed up at the lake. She needs you to come get her on the snowmobile. So, you know, it's a different
flavor.
It is. It's a different. It's a service. It's a public service. It's a different environment up there. We do everything we can to keep you informed on what's going on here, as well as around the country, around the world. I am so excited about this, Chris. We just got word that we have moved beyond the halfway point of the drive. We are at $302,000 raised. Our overall goal is $600,000. So your call right now to 1-888-694-6931 or online contribution at KERA.org will help us speed to the end of this membership campaign. Once we raise that last dollar of the $600K, it's over. We go back to the regular schedule. So please do your part now. And there are some thank yous that we need to issue.
Yeah, thank you for an additional gift from Marsha Odell in Snyder. Stephanie Duelmar, I'm so sorry, I'm reading this on a small monitor, renewing in Euless. Stephanie, you know who you are, and thank you very much. Thanks also to Kelly Cotton in Dallas for your membership contribution. You know, we heard a few minutes ago from a caller who said, I just wait for the perfect moment in the fundraising campaign to renew, and I did it now. Maybe this was the moment for you, or maybe it happened 3 days ago and somehow you didn't make it to the phone. Do it now, 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org. You will be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton. 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR in Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman.
And no matter where you listen, of course, you're listening to KERA, the station that gives you the tools that that you require, or that you want, or you need to be a better citizen. And we're asking you to contribute the dollars to help KERA be a better station, in turn to give you even more and better information to be an even better citizen, so that maybe you'll be motivated to give the station some dollars to continue to give you the tools you need. That's how it works. That's it. It's a really tight circle. It's the station and it's you. There isn't a whole lot of anything else going on. It's the station that you listen to already, and it's you. And we're asking for your support right now at 1-888-694-6931. We're asking for your support right now at KERA.org.
Just think about the things that you spend your money on and how they reflect what you value. I myself have a whole pack of kids at home, and I probably spend at least $100 a year on things like class snacks. I don't think of myself as a class snack person, but it's just something that is part of my annual budget, and I'm just aware of it. I definitely think of myself as a public radio person, and I try to make sure that my contributions every year really reflect that. The fact that I value public radio, that if I were to have to go a week without listening to public radio and still living in this part of the country, I don't know what I would do. I wouldn't know. I would just feel sort of at a loss.
Yeah, I agree, Chris. If I couldn't turn to public radio just to find out what's going on, just during the newscasts, I would feel lost. You know, and we know that that it's important to you to so because we know you listen. We have ways of learning about your listening. And you know, we're just asking you to give whatever you can to the station to help us make this goal and move on with our regular programming that you've come to love and trust and value. Why not support it? And I usually say this at some point in the drive, but email me, jwhittington@kera.org, and tell me why you're not supporting it.
Or why you are.
But in the former case, I'll see what I can do about it.
Our telephone number to make a contribution is 1-888-694-6931. At the $120 level, we have copies of White Rock Lake. It's a wonderful new book by Sally Rodriguez, A History of the Lake. You can also get to us online at kera.org. Back in a couple of minutes with artist Jaume Plinza.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.